What's good, everybody? Friday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete Jensen, Rob Reese here talking fantasy and sports betting. Bob Bender here as well, as always. What's up, guys?
What's up, everybody? Bobby, how you doing this morning? Happy Friday.
What's up, fellas? Looking forward to the Friday show with some picks and a bunch of storylines to get going here on this Friday, Petey.
Yeah, I mean, how about Mika Zibanejad, only player in NHL history with back-to-back six-point games against the same opponent? We could talk all about the Rangers, and we've been talking about them all week, really. I mean, all of our stories that have been rolling out have been saying, you know, Shesterkin's coming back, Zibanejad's rolling, right? Panarin's going. I mean, but what Zibanejad has done, Robbie, has rewarded fantasy owners that were patient during his struggles during the early season mess for the Rangers. And now it's like he's one of the most coveted players to own in fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy how quickly things change. Two hat tricks in his past five games. Now, if you look at his stat line for the regular season total, you see 26 points in 32 games. And yeah, I mean, you kind of say, okay, he's kind of living up to that expectation now. I mean, especially with these multi-point games. And I think with the addition of Adam Fox on the power play, Pete, we could see a couple more of these multi-point games the rest of the season for the Rangers. You know, Shesterkin comes back, gets a win in his start. I mean, there's so many things headed in the right direction. Lafreniere scored. Kako's been scoring. I mean, it's hard not to see this team contending for that fourth spot now.
Yeah, and it's amazing what they've done the past few games without their head coach there, which is a crazy storyline because we've all been hard on David Quinn for, you know, not getting the most out of those younger players. And now this guy Knobloch comes in and he's like, what, 4-1-1 and stuff. And they've had some of their biggest wins of the season. The team's playing loose right now. You know, we hope Quinn is back soon, of course, and the rest of the staff that's missing. But I mean, what they've done in this time that Quinn has been out, it's been like almost like they've bonded in a different way and they've emerged in a different way. And then when Quinn comes back, maybe even further round this thing into form. And the most important thing is getting Shesterkin back. I mean, what he did in that game got unnoticed, but a high save volume game. And we have him in the top 10 fantasy goalie rankings for the rest of the season for a reason, right? Like, people were critical of that when they saw that yesterday when we released it. But I really didn't think twice about it, and I know you didn't either.
No, I mean, and look at his stat line too. I think that's probably for people that didn't know how good he was, you know, save percentage wise, Pete, even when they weren't winning games, he was still playing very, very well. And that's one storyline in fantasy this season that's been so different, is you can still get value from a goalie, even if their team's not winning, you know, with a high save percentage. And now that the Rangers are winning, I think Shesterkin definitely top 10 the rest of the season for me, could finish top five, you know, right, I think, on the fifth spot, Pete, because you have guys like Kaapo Kähkönen that were just outside the fifth spot. Now he hasn't played. Cam Talbot looks like the guy there after starting back-to-back. So, you know, I think Shesty can really, you know, capture that spot. And then I would say, if you're trying to buy into this Rangers team right now, still look at a guy like Kratsov on the waiver wire. I know he didn't suit up, you know, on Thursday night, but Rangers are always kind of playing politics with the younger players. I would let that, you know, maybe breeze over for your few games. They're not going to win out. Okay, let's just come down to reality here. They will lose a game probably in the next few games. When that happens, maybe that's when Vitali Kratsov gets in the lineup and captures a spot.
Right. You might see them wait until Quinn gets back just because of how things have been tempered with some of the younger players on that roster. And again, we think that Kratsov, when he gets into the lineup, if he is given the appropriate role, he could take that right wing spot in the top six, maybe even on Panarin's line. But you're starting to see some huge single game potential from that other line between Zibanejad. You mentioned the two hat tricks in a short span. Remember, just like a couple of weeks ago, Chris Kreider, even when Zibanejad wasn't getting going quite yet, Kreider had two hat tricks in a short span as well. So, and Buchnevich just quietly doing his thing again with two goals. And he's been one of the breakout players of the entire season. And you're starting to see, yeah, like Shesterkin top 10 goalie, Adam Fox on the cusp of a top 10. He'll probably be in there next week after yesterday's game. You could say that for sure. We have him in a keeper league. We might actually keep him as our top defenseman moving forward. Right, Robbie?
Well, and I think exactly, Pete, I mean, no question with that for Adam Fox. But when you look at the Rangers' future, I mean, even heading into next season, if you're looking at the landscape, you know, their top line of Kreider, Zibanejad, and Buchnevich is so solid. You know that that's going to be the trio now, especially with Buchnevich. You can call this a breakout year because the past few seasons, he's done this for about three or four games in a row where he'll light it up and look like an elite player, but then he'll drop off. He hasn't dropped off this season. So I think that's where you say, look, Pavel Buchnevich is close to a point per game player. He's definitely going to be in the 60 to 65 point minimum range over an 82 game season. And I think when you approach your fantasy drafts, you know, you have to look at this Rangers team as one of the highest upside teams. And then on the second line, Pete, you're looking at guys like Stroman, Panarin, who have had great chemistry, you know, the past two seasons now. And then on the right side, they're giving Kako a chance, but hopefully, you know, somebody captures that and starts scoring there, because then you have a top six filled with high upside.
Right. And something we didn't mention on one of the previous shows about Buchnevich is that he's in his RFA contract year. So maybe that would explain why this is happening at this time. It was kind of crunch time for that player, especially with Lafreniere and Kako in the mix and so many good wings on that team, especially on the left side. It was like, you know, the clock was ticking for him to get the most out of his career. And he's certainly done that this year. And Adam Fox, another note on him, he's up to tied for seventh among all defensemen in points on the season. And he's probably just going to go up from here. I think, you know, with some of the other defensemen out there, like Cale Makar is back and, you know, had a huge game, scored a pretty goal. And I think Colorado, we got to talk about them as well, right? Like, they just romped Vegas. I know they were heavy favorites, and I was a little critical of that going into the game. I was saying, you know, this is a toss-up, but I think Colorado definitely has been flexing their muscles the past couple of weeks. And we got another goal from Jonas Donskoy as well. Don't miss out on him. He's been knocking at the door for sure.
Hey, before we get into Colorado, I just have to float this question out to both you guys. I think I know where Robbie stands. I have a sense where Petey stands, but let's just get it out here on the record. 326-21. Will the Rangers be in the playoffs? I think it's like plus 300 or so for them to get in the playoffs. And from what I'm seeing from teams like Philadelphia, for example, I like the Rangers' chances to sneak into the playoffs at that price, plus 300. Where do you stand right now today? And it's amazing because things just change so quickly in this league. So what we say now may be different than a week from now, but you got to follow the current trends. Right. And right now, you know, that stock is rising for the Rangers.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a great chance they could get in, especially you see now Pittsburgh, their secondary scoring is decimated. I know the Penguins have played great against the Rangers this year. They've owned them, you could say, but a couple more times they play each other. I mean, no Malkin for week to week, no Kapanen for week to week. Their second line looks like a mediocre team's third line. So is that a bona fide playoff team to me? No. And also the Boston Bruins, right? Like, they got Pastrnak and Krejci back, but now Tuukka Rask came back and he got injured again. So what does that mean for their goalie situation moving forward? And the Flyers, by the way, are completely finished this year. They got to go back to the drawing board. They got to reevaluate their cap situation. They're going to have to pay, you know, Couturier in 2 years. They're probably going to have to let Giroux go in 2 years when he comes up as a UFA. Hart is an RFA. His value's in shambles. I mean, the Flyers are done this season, though. We have to make that clear.
Done. Flyers are done. And so, yes, the Bruins concern me. And I think it's like the wear on the tread, you know, like how many games this team has played and do they have enough gusto to get into the playoffs? They should, but it's certainly not a guarantee. And when you look at the Rangers price, you're like, you know what, maybe I take a shot here. And the aging Bruins, you know, sort of, and Rask isn't healthy right now. I know he's going to come back at some point and he'll be good for him, but I think at that price you have to consider it.
Well, I think the Bruins will be fine. They'll get in. I mean, Krejci just came back, right? I mean, they'll be all right. He'll balance out that second line. They'll get a little depth scoring. It's always inconsistent for Boston. I think Pittsburgh is a team that is, you know, questionable to make it. The problem, I do think the Rangers will make it. And the reason why has already been outlined on the last program, that there's no question in my mind that the team has the talent to get there. They'll have the good schedule in April to get there as well. The only thing with Pittsburgh is they stink on the road. They're 14-3-1 at home and they can't play on the road. They've got about 50-50 remaining schedule. So there's a chance that they'll stay in even with their lack of depth scoring, as Pete alluded to, but I don't think this Pittsburgh team is going to do jack in the playoffs. They don't have the tools. I mean, Philadelphia, I'm not even going to talk about them on this program anymore. There's nothing to say regarding that franchise. And then I think the top two teams is definitely New York and Washington. New York, I like what I saw on Thursday night. I wasn't sure about these young guys, fellas. I really wasn't. Wahlstrom has continued to score. He looks like an elite player. He's not there yet, but he's continuing to score. I think that the division's pretty set. I think it's going to be New York, Washington, Boston, and I think New York Rangers will get that fourth spot.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually what I had at the start of the season. I had Philly missing. I had the Rangers and the Islanders in. So, like, slowly that has evolved to the point where Pittsburgh – and I didn't have Pittsburgh in. So, like, that's, like, what I originally expected, but it didn't look like that was going to happen earlier in the year, right, Robbie? We were talking about Philly. Even though we didn't like their metrics, they were had, like, the fewest shots on goal – through the first month of the season, fewest shots on goal per game, yet they were still winning. They were off to a hot start. Pittsburgh was winning despite their injuries and just, you know, shuffling the front office and stuff like that. But now we've seen it kind of correct itself over a time. And even over a 56 game season, you will see that happen. And that's why we were saying, especially you were saying, you know, I'm hesitant to cut the cord on Zibanejad. And we were hesitant to cut the cord on Malkin earlier in the year before he heated up. Hopefully for Malkin, you waited for him to heat up. You took advantage of that and you sold high because now he's out. You know, that was what exactly we were saying was going to happen.
No, exactly. It just took a little bit longer. And sometimes the same thing with sports gambling. If you're putting games, you know, if you're putting a lot of money up in the first half of the season, I would say hold your horses and wait till the trends level out, because they always do in the NHL. There's always teams that get off to great starts and then they fall off completely. So, you know, kind of seeing the same thing this year. I do want to talk about goalies here. My team in particular, I've got Kaapo Kakkonen, and he was my rock, you know, from mid-February, Pete, to mid-March. And now we see Talbot get these past two starts in a row. And I think you look at this Wild team, and yeah, it's a good problem for them to have, but it's a bad problem for me as a fantasy manager to have now that I don't know what to expect out of Kaapo Kakkonen.
For sure, man. I mean, Cam Talbot lately, 5-1-0, 954, two shutouts in his past six games. He's up to 925 on the season. And I checked this morning, the only team with a better team save percentage than the Wild is the New York Islanders. So how about that? Minnesota up to 919 and behind the Islanders at 921. So that's remarkable. I don't know that we expected Minnesota to have this good of a goalie tandem, even though their defense is so strong, just because they came into the year with some questions, like, was it going to be a three-headed monster? They still had Stalock at the time. Now they don't. Talbot missed some time. Kakkonen, of course, took advantage of that time. But now that they're back, it almost seems like they give the preferential treatment for some reason to Talbot, and they give him the tougher games to play, and he plays just as well as Kakkonen does in the other games, or just as well as you could have expected in some of these tough matchups.
It's so true. I mean, Talbot, right, they're rolling him out against the same quality opponents, you know, that are still hungry for wins in that division. I guess, you know, if I were to try and predict it, I'd say it will be a timeshare the rest of the season. I would almost pin it at 50-50 starts. And Dean Evason just hopes that, you know, one guy kind of holds down the throne, you know, so that they can elect a number one heading into the postseason. But, you know, I'm certainly looking at Kakkonen differently now. I've got Shesterkin, Samsonov, Nedeljkovic, and Kakkonen. And I think I can get rid of one of those. And right now, if I had to cut the cord heading into this weekend, it'd be Kakkonen. I mean, Nedeljkovic got another win, Pete. He looks like the guy that's going to be the backup when Mrazek comes back. And Mrazek's been skating. He's been taking some shots in practice. Like, it looks like he could be ready to go. I just don't think they need him to come back right now. So, you know, unless they're trying to ship out Reimer at the deadline, which at this point could be a little risky if you think about it for Carolina. If they ship out Reimer, then they got Mrazek and Nedeljkovic, they lose their goalie depth. This season you need to have three guys that can play. So I think Carolina is going to stand pat at the deadline. I wouldn't be surprised to see them keep James Reimer too.
Yeah, they should. They definitely should. I mentioned that, you know, maybe because he's an expiring contract, they could consider trading him. But let's be honest, the Hurricanes have a chance to win the whole thing this year. And you look at them compared to Colorado, who I mentioned earlier, like, Colorado doesn't even have a backup, let alone a third string right now. So that's one thing that the Hurricanes have in their back pocket, and they should keep it for sure, because you don't know what the twists and turns are going to be. As far as rookie goalies, it's been such a fluctuation. There have been so many valuable ones. We see Ottinger beat Tampa Bay, finally get a Dallas off the hex in that season series. We see Nedeljkovic playing so well. We see Sorokin on a ridiculous winning streak, Shesterkin coming back. Kokkonen is in our top 10, but kind of falling by the day or by the hour, you could say. So which of those guys do you view as the most valuable rookie goalie when it's all said and done for the end of this season? Like, is it Sorokin? He has maybe the highest trajectory, but he's part of a timeshare.
I still think it's Chesty. I mean, if you look at the team landscapes, like Minnesota, I'll always go back to how strong their defense is. You know, I think a lot of young goalies would like to play in that situation. You know, for the Islanders, I mean, we know exactly what their goaltending's been for the past three seasons in a row. It's been the same stats, carbon copy to every single year. It doesn't really matter who the backup is. Now they have one with elite upside, which is great, Pete. But again, you can roll Sorokin out, you know, once a week. You're guaranteed to get the W, a 935 save percentage. I mean, it prints in fantasy. So I would say certainly Shesterkin to me, just because the Rangers had so many questions about regression. They had a young D core, their forwards. You knew that there was going to be issues with Lafreniere and Kako again with Coach Quinn. You just knew something wasn't right there. So I think Chesty elevating his game, keeping them in it in the first half of the season when all those kind of fluke teams were playing well, I think that says the most to me. And even Kevin Lankinen pitches a 41 save shutout on Thursday night. And I think now is the time we have to elevate Sasha Barkov to the Hart Trophy conversation, because you see what Florida really is without that player. He might right now be the most valuable player to his team in the entire National Hockey League.
Definitely his stock has risen in his absence, which is unfortunate. Hopefully he comes back this weekend. It sounds like he could, but the longer that lingers on, his absence could be doom for the Florida Panthers, no doubt. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Lankinen, because we took him out of the top 25 goalie rankings. One guy reached out saying, oh, you know, he won his last game, he broke the losing streak, he should still be in there. Then he gets the shutout. Chicago's still hanging around in that central mix, and a nice response for them. I mean, for them, it doesn't matter that Barkov was out. Like, they needed some wins, and they needed them fast. They needed to stop the bleeding, and they did. So credit to them for sure. You know, we kind of have just been talking about their regression, but they've done a really nice job given the circumstances of their roster. And I expect them to still be a fringe playoff team. I don't know that they're going to make it. I don't have them in. But yeah, I think just the response from that group has been really good for sure the past few days.
The best matchup of the whole weekend, in my opinion, is the back-to-back between Nashville and Chicago. They play on the 27th and 28th back-to-back. Yeah. And if Nashville wins both of those games, they are tied with Chicago in the standings. Like, this is humongous for Nashville. And I think personally, Nashville, say what you want, they're not exciting. I'm not going to try and make a case for them, because they're not, even with Tolvanen now up to 8 goals, which is a fantastic storyline. They are not an exciting offensive team, but they still can hunker down defensively. And Pete, I mean, if they tie Chicago for fourth in that division, like, that to me is going to be one of the better storylines of the second half, because Saros is playing really, really well. Rene's been winning, you know, when they have him start, and they broke out against, yes, it's against Detroit, but with 7 goals. I mean, I never thought it would be possible to see Nashville put up 7.
I know, we see some ridiculous goal totals this week, right? Rocco Grimaldi with 4 goals out of nowhere. And it's what, the day after Andrew Kopp scores 4 goals. Those are the only two players in the league to score 4 goals in a game this year. Totally random names. I mean, Kopp has been on the fantasy radar for the whole season, even when he's been down to the third line. We did want to mention that, unfortunately, when we picked up Donskoy earlier in the week, we dropped Andrew Kopp the day before his 4 goal game, and now everybody's trying to pick him back up again. So he's been a great story this year. He's like 20, I think there are like 7 Winnipeg Jets players over 20 points this year, including him. So they are even scraping some value on their third line, one of the best offenses in the league.
I mean, it's true. Like, that team does have a high ceiling. And it's funny because Kopp, like, he benefited early on from the Jets being a little bit banged up. And then when Dubois had to quarantine, like, they gave him this top role on the team, playing 19 minutes a game at even strength. And you're like, where did this come from? Like, he's always been a pretty good player on the third line. But now this season, he's like one of the best fantasy sleepers. He's like kind of like the Brian Rust, in my opinion, of last year, where it's just like,
yeah,
you just keep waiting for it to end and it doesn't. He just keeps going. And yeah, I hope, you know, the waiver claims, if you did drop Kopp and you tried to re-add him, are successful for you, like ours. But, you know, certainly another one of those second half things where you're like, okay, this is probably not going to stop. It's going to keep going. But yeah, I think that division, Pete, the Central with Nashville and Chicago now, I mean, you look at Columbus there in the fifth spot with 34 points. They've got the worst goal differential in the division, excluding Detroit. So I don't know. I mean, as well as Seth Jones has been playing for me and one of my teams now, I just don't think that team's going to do it. And then Dallas, credit to Dallas, they pull off a nice, exciting win against Tampa Bay on Thursday night too. And now they've hit the 30-point mark for the season, just three shy of Nashville for the sixth spot. So I think this division's going to be the one to watch, you know, for the remainder.
Yeah, no doubt. And how about that electric play by Roope Hintz to win the game? And like, we've been kind of talking about that player from a negative light just because he's dealing with an injury. But when this guy's in the lineup, I don't know how this is happening, if he's banged up. But I mean, my goodness, the guy has emerged as their best forward, bar none. I mean, you can't even argue that anymore, who the Dallas Stars top forward is on the roster. That includes Jamie Benn, includes Gurianov, includes Robertson, who's been really good in his own right. And even when Radulov is there, like, that team is like Hintz or bust this year. If when he's in the lineup, they could beat anybody. They proved it last night. And that's a guy, like, we keep taking him out of the top 100 forward list because he's day to day every other day. But like, we got to start, I guess we got to get him back in there, right? Like, his upside is so high. And if Dallas makes a run, finds some consistency, he's going to be really valuable if he's in the lineup, which is a big question.
And just he's so clutch too, but it's going to be one of those things that I think comes out, you know, when the regular season wraps up, like how bad his injury was. And we're going to just be mystified, you know, that he was still playing and scoring through that injury. So Dallas, yeah, I mean, again, it's hard for me to sit here and try and make an argument why they should be in the playoffs. But if you watch the game last night, they do look like a playoff team. They were down in a 2-0 hole against Tampa Bay. And you're thinking, here we go. Vassy's got his 13th straight locked up in the bag. And then just three goals out of nowhere, you know, in the second period for Dallas. And then Hintz scores the game winner, you know, late in the third period. And you're like, that was one of the most exciting finishes that you've seen. And Dallas outshot the Lightning. You know, they were better in the faceoff circle than the Lightning. They hit with the Lightning. They were blocking shots. They were converting on the power play. I mean, I think it shows to me, Pete, like, that is a playoff caliber club. I just think they don't have the runway, you know, to get there.
Yeah, I think they have, the chance. Like, if they get Sagan or Bishop back at the right time, and Radulov now all of a sudden has missed like the past three games, unfortunately, with an injury, he's probably got a nagging thing going on as well. I did want to mention Joe Pavelski. He's still over a point per game on the season. I was saying, you know, Hintz is their best forward. I'm just talking like young, like emerging players with a high trajectory. Like, obviously Joe Pavelski has been their best forward this season. He had a 3-point game against the Tampa Bay Lightning and he just keeps powering along. But like, even with Pavelski having the season that he's having, they have not been a good team. So that's the thing. He's been a constant, but like, they need somebody else to take that next step to get them back into contention. I think Hintz is the only guy out of all the others I mentioned that could do that for them.
Actually, I just looked at Dallas's schedule. They play four consecutive games against Detroit from April 19th to the 24th. Whatever, you've got $20 laying around, you might want to consider putting that on whatever the price is right now, Bob, if you could look at that for Dallas to get in. I mean, that's, to me, Pete, and you mentioned with Sagan coming back and even Bishop potentially, like, that is a lock at this point. I mean, I don't care about the runway anymore. Like, if you've got four consecutive games against Detroit late in the season, you're winning all four of those.
That's a good point. I sort of wrote off Dallas, but now they're roping me back in, unfortunately. I had given up on them. I said, forget this team. I don't want to talk about them. But that division, the bottom half of that division, you know, it's very competitive, and Dallas could easily get in. So we'll have to figure out what the price is for Dallas to get in the playoffs, and maybe a little shekel on the Stars. My good pal Bonus. Why not? Back Bonus again.
Yeah, they're ropeing you back into the mix here. And Roope Hintz, 21 points in 21 games, by the way. So, you know, you can make the case that he's been just as productive as Joe Pavelski this season when he has been healthy. And the power play is good in Dallas too. So that can help them. If they can, you know, break their drought against a team like Tampa Bay and end Vasilevsky's winning streak, sure, they can, you know, destroy a team like Detroit. I know they've had some bad losses sprinkled in, like they lost to Detroit once this year. So they just, it's all about consistency for them. They have to win consecutive games. Like you see some teams out there just struggling to win consecutive games. And then once they do, you start to look at them completely differently, right? Like, I mean, even the Sharks to win consecutive games against the LA Kings. I was really confident going into that game the other night that the Kings would bounce back because I view the Kings as a playoff competitor. But now, like with the rival doing that to them, like you have to just like look back at the whole division standings and like reconsider some things.
Yeah, I mean, since March 12th, LA has just dropped so many games that, you know, they needed to win. And I think the most disappointing thing right now, in my opinion, in this season is in the West Division, you have the Blues who are 3-4-3 in their past 10 games. At 37 points, they've been stuck there. They're idling. And then below them, Arizona has no juice. LA has been 4-5-1, lost 2 in a row, not good enough in their past 10. San Jose, they've won 2 straight, but they're not good enough either. And it's like one of those other teams should be pushing the Blues to get this thing going. Like there should be a nice race there in that division for the remainder of the season. But now we're at the point where LA is probably going to drop out. And that was one of my favorite waiver wire teams too, with Iafallo, Kempe, Dustin Brown was available in one league. I was streaming him at one point. And now it's like, you just look at it as Kopitar and Doughty, probably Cal Peterson still for the remainder of the season too, with the save percentage. But beyond that, like unless they call up Quentin Byfield and he starts ripping it up, I think that team's pretty much dead in the water too, Pete.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that none of those young guys, and we saw Kempe fantasy relevant for a while, but then he cooled off. It's like no, none of those secondary guys, the young players, they're all nice young players, but nobody's taken that step into fantasy relevance on the second line, which is prevent. If you're a one line team, it's like you see even Boston at points this year. It doesn't matter how good the rest of your lineup is, how many stars you have, how good your defense is. It's like if you're a one line team, you're going to have your off nights. And clearly a team like LA doesn't have the horses to contend with the top teams like Vegas, Colorado, and even Minnesota this year. But St. Louis, I was looking, they're bottom five in the NHL in team save percentage. I mean, does that make you worry about them at all? Or do you think they have enough leeway in that division? But I know we were talking them up as maybe a cup contender a week ago, like if they were to bounce back, but that's a glaring weakness. The teams around them in that bottom five, bottom 10 are not good teams. I mean, we could say that.
Honestly, I think they are a cup contender still, just because when they get healthy, I think they're going to rebound. And it's all about the team that gets hot in the last like 2.5-3 weeks of the regular season. I could definitely see it being the Blues. I've gotten a lot of questions about Jordan Binnington and what to do with him. And unfortunately, it kind of goes back to the Zibanejad conversation. There's really nothing you can do with a player like that. I mean, the draft pedigree was too high in fantasy. You probably took this guy in the top 60 overall. You can't cut a player like that. And there's no quality streaming options that would give you next to nothing. I mean, value-wise, if Binnington plays to his potential, you know, the rest of the season, you're going to have a really good asset on your hands for fantasy playoff time. So, you know, if you want to stream Ville Husso or whatever against the Ducks on the second of a back-to-back, you know, or the first of back-to-back, go for it. You know, that's a good stream. But beyond that, I mean, he's not going to capture the starting job there. And I think the Blues, I mean, you'd rather be in that fourth spot in that division because, you know, I think you're going to get a better matchup. You're going to get the Goliaths going head-to-head in that first round, you know, whether it's Vegas or whether it's Colorado. And the Blues know how to win a series like that. Like, they can shut it down. Binnington's going to steal a game. And I just think that team, it's a little unfortunate, but they kind of play that lackadaisical style where they know they're good. They know they can turn it on at any moment, and they kind of wait to do that. So I'm not out on the Blues.
Good to know. I mean, I think that they're, you know, they definitely have that capability, but it's just, I'm getting to the point in fantasy this year. Like, I know we cut the cord on Jacob Markstrom because the Flames are an absolute mess. They lost both games, consecutive games to the Ottawa Senators, who have beaten them something like 5 out of 7 times this year, which is just embarrassing. But yeah, some of these, like the point I'm making about Binnington, Carey Price, Jacob Markstrom, the workhorse goalies, someone was saying on Twitter to our goalie rankings, like, I would rather have a goalie that's in the net more days than not. over some of these rookie timeshare guys like Nedeljkovic and Ottinger and Sorokin. I mean, at a certain point, I disagree with that because I'd take the quality over the quantity in most of my leagues. And I have a lot of those rookies on my rosters and it's doing darn well for me. And the teams where I have, you know, a Binnington or a, you know, a Carter Hart or guys like that, like you're getting to the point where you just got to like move on and take the guy that's performing better for you in certain spot starts. Even that's how I think
we cannot put Carter Hart's name into the Binningtons, into the price. You know, that is 500 save percentage. You know, that is, I had to double take that.
He's not even in the 200 rankings anymore. How sad is that?
Well, he shouldn't be. I mean, he shouldn't be in the 300. He shouldn't be in the 400, the 500. I mean, this is, you know, it's just is what it is at this point. Now, Calgary, I do want to touch on. This is becoming the Philadelphia of the North Division. I just think that we're seeing the bad team makeup rear its head. I mean, even when Gaudreau scores, they lose. You know, it's like, okay, so the star players start getting going and then they've got nothing beyond that. And then when the star players drop off, like they'll have Dylan Dubé score a goal and you're like, okay, this isn't going to last. So it's like you're seeing this awkward mix of guys, you know, Sutter behind the bench trying to slow the game down against the Ottawa Senators. And you're like, there's just no way that they should be in playoff contentions if that's what you're going to do, you know, against a team like Ottawa.
Yeah, the sad thing about Calgary is like Sean Monahan's got to be close to droppable at this point. I mean, it's not like he's had a horrible season, but like the ceiling isn't there anymore. We've seen now 2-3 seasons in a row that this guy, even with the consistent exposure to Gaudreau, who's having a nice season, it hasn't been up to expectations for a few years running for that player. And he's center only eligible. So, you know, you could probably find someone better out there, a second line center, even some cases like Pageau from the Islanders, a third line center that you'd rather have that covers some categories better than Monahan. So obviously if you have Lindholm, he's flexible. He's been really good this year, close to a point per game. Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau, you keep those guys. But other than that, it's a scary sight in the offensive department for Calgary these days, right? Including Monahan.
And they've got a matchup against Winnipeg, you know, this Friday night, and that could be a total beatdown if they're not careful there. And I would like to see Markstrom have a statement game, you know, like we saw him play with Vancouver last year, where he just kind of steals one. That's exactly what the Flames need. I mean, they're still, I don't want to talk like they're not in contention. They're still right there in the North Division. You know, Montreal has been off the whole week, basically. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit skewed from that perspective because Calgary has three more games played than Montreal. But, you know, points wise, if they rattled off three or four wins in a row, they'll be in there. I just don't think they have any business doing that. And then at the trade deadline, you know, I think the Johnny Gaudreau rumors are going to start flying around here because, you know, it's unfortunate, but teams get into these knee-jerk reaction situations. And that's exactly what Calgary's in right now.
Yeah, that's something that has been a rumbling for a few years now, right? Johnny Gaudreau, whether he would be traded or not. And they've kind of stuck with him because he's the part of the fabric of that team. But yeah, I was talking about Monahan. He's got points in only two of his past nine games. And Gaudreau, of course, took the step back last year, big step back. He was a little bit better this year, but another coaching change. I mean, it's like the coach changes in Calgary every year. They've had three different coaches in each of the past 3 years. So you can't get that continuity that way. And it has to fall on the players eventually. So it's, you know, something that has been boiling over for a while, and now it's really starting to shut things down up there.
Hey, can we go through the Friday board? DFS.
Let's do it.
Picks. What are we looking at? Start with. And by the way, the sledgehammer standings have been really, really positive here. Nick Alberga couldn't get on the board last night with the Blues. I mean, the Blues had 37 plus shots, and Cam Talbot shuts him out, and unfortunately the Blues can't get the win for Nick Alberga. Robbie, I think, has gotten his last two, so I think he's in the 4-0 range. I got to update the standings after the show, but where are we looking? I don't see any sledges on the board personally. Rob, what do you think?
There's nothing for me sledge-wise tonight. I have to say Calgary's minus 130 on the money line against the Jets. That stinks. I mean, that I smell it from here. I just don't understand, you know, what they're seeing that we're not. Winnipeg's rolling. You know, they're playing for first in the North. I don't know, Petey. Like, I'd love to say, you know, counter, you know, here and say the Flames are the play there, but the Jets at plus 110, you know, yeah, they're bound to lose one, but I like that value.
Yeah, I've taken a couple of, you know, sledgehammer picks on the Jets this year, and they've done well for me. That's pretty close to one. We'll see how the show rounds out, but that's, I'm with you, man. I can't believe that they're underdogs with how the Flames have been trending lately. I think it's a big opportunity for the Sharks against the Coyotes. They got two games against the Coyotes this week, and those are two games in hand that they have on the Blues. So if they could somehow win both of those, they've gotten good goaltending from Martin Jones lately. He's got like a 930 something save percentage over his past seven games, and he's got 10 wins on the season. So, you know, his record honestly looks pretty good. And we were saying, Robbie, we never thought we'd see the day that we'd be talking about Martin Jones in a positive light on a fantasy show again, but he's returning some value, and he's at number 200 in the top 200 rankings right now, which you can find nhl.com/fantasy.
He's got three wins in his past four starts. His loss was against St. Louis as a one goal hockey game. He had 33 saves in it with a 920 save percentage. I mean, that's solid, Pete. And like, I don't know. I mean, I'm at the point where if I were in a bind, you know, I would pick up Martin Jones at the goalie position. Like, you could do worse. I would say I would go, you know, Martin Jones over like a Gustafson in Ottawa.
Right.
I like the value there for them against the Coyotes, because that's kind of technically a home game for the Sharks too, since they played so many in that arena to start the season. But I like the appeal there. I just, like, every time I buy in a little bit on that San Jose team, like, they just implode. So, you know, I would just, that's my only hesitation.
When I see a fishy line like this Winnipeg Calgary line is, I normally would go Calgary and say, all right, Vegas knows something. But based on what we're seeing on the ice and the two losses to Ottawa on Monday, Wednesday, it's really, really difficult to take the Flames at this point. And I would agree with you that it's Winnipeg or nothing, and don't try to overthink it. You know, don't try to look at the line and say, oh, well, Vegas must know something, I'm going to take Calgary. Maybe Calgary wins, but I'd be much more comfortable taking Winnipeg at this point rather than a Calgary team that looks like they potentially could have just mailed it in at this juncture of the season. Like, losing 2-2 to Ottawa is quite concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back to the well. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to take a sledgehammer on the Jets because it's a plus number. I mean, plus 110, it should not be a plus number in my book. So, yeah, I'll take that. I mean, the Jets got third liners scoring four goals in a game. The Calgary Flames can't get anybody scoring a multi-goal game at this point in the season. So, just take that for just as one of the many examples of why the Jets should beat the Flames tonight, at least on paper.
Yeah, and Robbie's sledgehammer on the Jets the other night, it was a 5-1 total shellacking. So that got him the nice sledgehammer. The Jets have been, I think, if we looked at all the teams that we've taken with the sledges, the Jets are right up there atop the teams for sure that have delivered on the sledges.
And if they blow out the Flames, which could be another 5-1, I mean, I think Calgary's calling up Philly, and, you know, there might be a little Gaudreau Konechny swap or something, you know, which would just be totally pointless, you know, for each team. But that's what I think, that's where we're heading this season, is like, even though it's a condensed 56 game schedule, I think some of these GMs are kidding themselves, you know, about the quality of their roster. And I think Calgary, I mean, unfortunately, I love the Flames, but unfortunately, I think they are the biggest victim of overvaluing the talent there.
I mean, if the Flyers go out and start buying at the deadline, that to me doesn't make any sense at all. But that market and where they thought they were going to be based off of last year, and where everyone thought they were going to be, we thought they were going to be a better team than this. Maybe there's a little pressure to go out and buy, but that doesn't make sense from an organizational standpoint. As far as I'm concerned, I would look at the St. Louis Blues tonight against Anaheim, and I love the way the Blues played last night. They just could not get a goal against Minnesota. Maybe a puck line play for St. Louis plus money. You figure they're going to be able to score some goals, and maybe you can get one late and you can win that bet against the Anaheim Ducks. The problem with that bet is the Blues let up a lot of goals, as Pete mentioned earlier in this show. So anytime you take them on the puck line, it's a little scary, but I kind of like that tonight. Certainly not a sledge, but something I'm looking at.
There have been some, I would call it puck line season right now, because there have been some good puck line opportunities with the Avalanche. I know I took them on the puck line on the show a couple of shows ago, and they delivered against the Coyotes in that game. I think last night, right, we were talking, Robbie, you look at some of the value if you were to, say, have parlayed the Rangers on the puck line, which was a good sense we all had against the Flyers after the 9-0 win. If you parlayed that with, like, Pittsburgh on the puck line against Buffalo, you could get some good value. And that was a very likely thing to happen last night. And it did. So definitely don't be, you know, hesitant. Sometimes, like, we're hesitant to say, I'm taking a team on the puck line. If you see something there and you see some value, now is the time in the middle of the season with some of the stuff going on.
Puck line Bobby.
There's not a better time to get on that too, Petey, as you just said. We did get a question real live. Last question of the program. On Twitter, John Roberts asks us, is it time to drop Hart? Hold on. It's a keeper league, but he will most likely not be worth the value of the draft pick it requires to keep him. I said, drop in all formats. You know, I'm out. I'm out 100%. I don't care what your settings are, what the scoring is, keeper league, non-keeper, 10 team, 8 league, 4 team, whatever, I'm dropping.
So would you say right now, out of those, whatever, 7 rookie goalies, including Lankinen, like, are you more inclined to take all 7 of those rookie goalies in a keeper league over Carter Hart? Has his value diminished to that extent, even in a keeper league?
Yes. And the reason I'm so bullish about this is because I don't want a Philadelphia goalie anytime, anywhere. Yeah. Near my fantasy squad. I mean, this is the same thing people said, you know, you post at what, like a 930 save percentage in the WHL and your crown is the next Dominic Hasek. It's like, hold on, you have to do it in the NHL level. It's the same thing with Calgary and this Dustin Wolf kid. They keep writing stories about him and it's like, he hasn't played a game yet. It's like, we can't anoint someone as the next throne here for goalie and they haven't even played well in the NHL level.
The reason I would agree with you, Robbie, on that is the fact that he's in Philadelphia, and that city can just be so brutal on players struggling, and it can't get any worse for Carter Hart right now. I mean, he's getting yanked out of games. He's totally lost his confidence. Now, listen, you would hope that this guy will be able to right the ship at some point. He's got the pedigree. He's still very young. I would feel a lot more confident if he was doing it in a different city other than Philadelphia because of the pressure, the scrutiny, and of course, then the history of being cursed at the goalie position. So that's what would keep me wary of holding on to Carter Hart is the fact that he's got to do it in this city, which has a terrible history, and it could be very difficult on a young goalie mentally. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that right now with Hart.
Ron Hextall, when he was the GM there, said that Hart was not ready. They sent him back to the WHL for a fifth season. Now, WHL, if you're playing, it's like a high school going, you know, for the second senior year. It's like, you're going to play well. You know, you're a 22-year-old guy beating up against, you know, 16 and 17-year-olds. I mean, it's just like, I don't have, that doesn't say accolades to me. It doesn't read, you know, future star to me. So I'm out on Carter Hart. Pete, I'd like to be in a position where, you know, maybe in a keeper league, he does get dropped next season, Philadelphia, you know, rights the ship and they're off to a good start. That's where I'd like to come in and feel a little bit more safe about picking a player up, but I would not put up any draft capital to keep that player.
Actually, this morning in our deep keeper league, somebody dropped Carter Hart to pick up like a marginal forward. I mean, that's how far it's come. I actually, in one of my other leagues, I picked up UC Saros, who's like, I think he's like 8-6 with a 920 save percentage and won again. I only allowed one goal against Detroit and, you know, taking advantage of the weaker central division. There's also like Jack Campbell out there who's starting for the Maple Leafs during Freddie Anderson's injury absence. Like, we're at the point where you would, not to, you know, really rag on Hart, but I mean, I would pick up UC Saros over Carter Hart if he was available in my league. And I would definitely pick up Jack Campbell, who has something to prove the rest of the season with Freddie in the contract year and currently injured. So those are some other waiver wire guys, including Cam Talbot, who we talked about earlier, that you would rather side with for the rest of the season over the Flyers and Carter Hart.
No doubt. So if you've got any questions over the weekend, waiver wire, fantasy playoff advice, hit us up, keep the 5-star reviews coming, and we will talk to everybody Monday morning with Waiver Wire James.